just dream to the bed. I've got voices in my head. Hello, people. How is it going? Monday afternoon, it is time for Monster Legend Podcast. And today's episode is Monster Legends of New York. Be ready for this. This is part one of Monster Legends of New York. Part two will come out on Thursday. Also, I've been announcing on the Instagrams and the Twitters today, episode is beginning of sweepstakes, and as promised, I'm going to tell you how you're going to be able, how you enter that sweepstakes by listening to this episode. I'll tell you how. More on that later. First off, I want to thank you for listening to this episode. And we can get into our first cryptozoological find in New York. By my mouse. Alright. First up is Champy. Champy is a legendary lake monster said to live in Lake Champlain. This is pretty much the Nessie of North America, so to speak. There have been over 300 sightings of Champy, dating back to at least 1819, causing it to become a regional icon often used to promote tourism. Wow. Makes sense. You want to go for the monster somewhere. You want to get people in there and people want to see it. Very. Makes a lot of sense. You know, I want to see a monster. Really cool. Interesting. But Lake Champlain namesake. It's also claimed that Lake Champlain namesake Samuel D. Champlain was the first to see the legendary creature. Wow. However, the first alleged sighting of a giant sea serpent in the lake happened on July 22, 1819, near Port Henry, New York. Which, didn't really come much to anything until 1873, where the legend caught the public eye when the New York Times reported the sensational signs of an enormous serpent with reflective silver scales by a railroad crew, as well as an alleged sighting by a Clinton County sheriff. Ooh. Wonder how, I guess they were working by a lake, the railroad crew, and I guess the county sheriff was by the lake as well. What could be silver scales? Like a, not time, like maybe a submarine, maybe. So I think there were submarines back then. I think they were boats. Like they were wooden submarines. Oh. There was a photo taken back in back in the day, I think 1960 something, I think. Let me double check on that one just a second. Right with you. How you having doing? How was your weekend? Is it good? Lots of stuff, crazy stuff going on right now. Dang COVID and cops being freaking stupid, idiots, morons. I'm real sorry for everybody. It's losing somebody and got someone taken away from them. I know the feeling. Apparently that 1819 sighting was by name of Captain Crumb. It's a great name. It'd be great for like a bread, like a, not, what's it called? Bread crumbs. Yeah. Captain Crumbs bread crumbs. They're great for bread and bread and fish. That'd be great. Don't you think? He said he claimed to see the anomalous creature of monstrous proportions. Said it was a 187-foot long black serpent with a head that resembled a seahorse, as well as having three teeth, eyes that put the color of a peeled onion, a white star on its forehead, and a belt of red around its neck. That is the description given by Captain Crumb in July 22nd, 1819, which is seven years after the War of 1812, and it's going on time. I think President, not Andrew Jackson. Was it Andrew Jackson? No, it was 1820s. Andrew Jackson. Jefferson. Wait. Jefferson or I don't know. Target words. Alright. So in like I said, 1873, P.T. Barnum heard about this champy creature, and he put up a award for anyone who can find it or get the body. It was about $20,000 bounty, dead or alive, for Champy sea serpent that P.T. Barnum put up, which is equal to is equal to what cost 20,000 in 1873 will cost $432,532.48 in 2019. $1,000 cost you $944. 21 in 1873, 2019. So a lot of money put up for that, but these awards were never collected. However, and he would suggest that Parry's boats would use Gatling guns and spray the water, the bullets, and anything bigger than 50 foot take up to see him. Oh, in 1977, a photograph was taken by Sandra Mancy. She claimed to see seen a creature in a lake while on vacation, and Hurley snapped the photo. Investigations for the photo suggested there was no tampering, but there was no negatives of the photo to prove its authenticity. She only snapped a single shot of this apparently extraordinary sight, and there's no, like I said, there's no photographs to clarify the photo's accuracy. Many have also pointed out it resembles to the famous alleged photo of the Loch Ness Monster. The surgeon's photo, which was proven to be a hoax in 1994. I'm going to look up this photo right now while I'm recording this. It looks very, I don't know if that's it or not. I think this is it. It's black and white. It looks very, very weird. It is a, I think this is it. I'll try to describe this picture for you since it obviously can't see it. It is a picture of a lake with a clear sky in the background and a forest shoreline. And there's a creature with a very long neck that's surfacing on the water. It is definitely not a sturgeon or a crocodile. It appears that this head is above the water and it's curved, and I say about 70-60 degrees, almost parallel to the water, to the right. And its body, like it's looking over its shoulder, you know what I mean? What else we got here? Oh, no. Look at my notes. Okay. Like Nessie, the lake monster of Loch Ness, Champy is a subject of interest to proponents of cryptozoology as pseudoscience revolving around the search for monsters and mythical creatures. I don't like the word pseudoscience. Regardless of their preference, science of Champy and the legend that surrounds them have been embraced by many in the Lake Champlain region as an attraction for tourists and a fun symbol of community pride. The state of Vermont passed a symbolic resolution protecting Champy in 1982. And New York passed a similar resolution encouraging citizens to photograph lake signs next year. Wow, that's pretty crazy. That is very, very interesting. There's over 300 sightings. You must think there must be something there, right? Or, I don't know if it's a sea monster. Like, there's definitely something that is going on in that lake. When you say, they're seeing something. The question is what? Is that a giant sea serpent with three teeth and red thing around his neck, a star on his forehead? I don't know. Let me know what you think. Before we move on to another lake monster, I want to tell you a little bit more about the how to enter those sweepstakes. In order to enter the sweepstakes, you're going to need to do one thing. Simply do this. On the post, I'm going to post a picture of cryptid that I have talked about in this episode, and it'll be the cryptid that I'll tell you. I'll say this is I haven't decided yet which one I'm gonna do. I'll I probably decide later and tell you at the end. Comment four emojis in a specific order. I'll tell you those emojis throughout the episode. So you have to listen to the entire episode to know what those emojis are. And first one to comment those emojis in the order I tell them will win the sweepstakes. So that's why I've been telling you to subscribe so you'll get notified, be able to hear this episode first. And of course, family and close friends are not able to enter the sweepstakes because of nepotism stuff. That makes sense. Sorry. And the prize is some merch. All right. Next up, we have Georgie. And there was only 45 states in the country. The leading cause of death in America was ammonia, and in Hague, New York, the Lake George monster was created. Story of Lake... Oh man, this is a crazy story. Okay. So, the story of Lake George monster, or Georgie as it came to be known, began with a competition between two friends. Colonel William Mann, publisher of Town Publix, which was a predecessor for the New Yorker magazine, and Gen R painter Harry Mortress. So what happened is I think one of these guys made up this thing about catching this big ass fish, right? And this other guy made this thing. According to legend, Waltress, in retaliation for a fishing trick Man had played on him a week or two prior, which he pretended to catch a whopping 40-pound trout, only to have Waltress learn the fish was made of wood, made a 10-foot long cedar log into a sea monster. So he made a sea monster out of a log, right? And he would pull it through the water and scare a bunch of people. And like, oh my god, it's a freaking monster all over this freaking place. Like, what the hell's happening? Oh. And this is back in 1904. And you imagine people, 1904, you're crazy, going erratic. Waltress was quoted as inserting two telegraph pole and slayers of green glass for eyes and painting the log to give the appearance of a monster. Waltress then rigged a rope and pulley to make the monster move. While Mann and several other of the New York acquaintances were on the water, Waltress brought the log out and gave the crew quite a show. Georgie, like George Monster, eventually Waltress gave up on the gag. So he did this for a while, but eventually he gave up on the gag. And it wasn't until 1920 when the actual body was found, which was his two logs and all the stuff he used to make it. A few years later, Grisk got retrieved the monster and brought it back to Lake George. Even though Waltress' prank happened over a century ago, Georgie is still a fixture in Lake George lore. Each year, the Lake George Historical Association and Museum draws visitors wishing to see a modeled-down replica of Waltress' original monster. Wow, that's really cool. So, this guy made a prank. Basically, pranked his friends, right? And a century later, they're still talking about that. That's how good of a prank this guy made. It's hilarious. That's the best prank ever. That's pretty... How do you top that? I don't know. Some joke that Like George Hoax has been made a viral graffiti magazine's list of 7 lamest yet widely believed cryptozoological hoaxes. So this is another hoax. This is a hoax, everybody. This is a confirmed hoax of like Georgie, the Lake Monster was a hoax. Let's make it clear. But some joke that the Lake George Monster has in fact left Lake George for Lake Champlain, becoming Champy. I don't know. But yeah, we didn't know because we got it. Told us what happened and how he did it and what he made that stuff out of. Oh boy. So people decided to still search Lake George anyway, but the only thing to be found at the bottom of the Lake George is artifacts from the Revolutionary War, of which Lake George was a main waterway. Pretty nuts. The first emoji in that you will need to enter is the crocodile emoji. Again, that is the crocodile emoji. That is their first emoji. Again, then you put these all in one comment. Can't be like one after another. It'd be all in one. And the sweepstakes will end. And the winner will be chosen or announced at the Thursday when part 2 comes out. Next up, we have another lake monsters. It's more lake monsters, the Finger Lake Monsters. Among the most intriguing stories are the numerous reported sightings in the deepest of the lakes of large aquatic creatures. Lake monsters. Wow. Native American believes Seneca Lake to be a bottomless lake with a monster that lived in its depths. Ooh. Went on to account that members of the newspaper staff have been living in daily anticipation of Old Granny's appearance. And if. Let's see more of this. The reports of monsters in Cayuga Lake were numerous, perhaps even routine in the 1800s, and can be inferred from a story in the January 5th, 1897 edition of the Ithaca Journal. Incredibly, this piece reported that recent sighting marked the 69th consecutive year in which there was a confirmed encounter with a monster nicknamed Old Granny. All right, so 69 years of seeing this monster, Old Granny, and had refused reported assignments that would often take. The story went on to recount the members of the newspaper staff have been living in daily anticipation of Old Granny's appearance, and had refused reporting assignments that would have taken them near the lake because they were afraid of the monster. 1897 incident was reported to have been by an Ithaca resident who was driving along the lake eastern shore and saw what he must be the large lawn sea serpent. If I could. The creature was described by witness as being approximately 12 to 15 feet in length. It was speculated that they might be members of the Seneca Lake sea serpent family that found their way into local waters through a subterranean channel, which is believed to exit between two lakes. Legends of tunnels connecting Cayuga and Seneca lakes have long circulated, which anyone with a rudimentary grasp of the notion of water seeking its own level knows would be impossible. So I guess one of these, not very familiar with the geography of this area, but I'm assuming that one of these lakes is higher elevation than the other. It was speculated that they might be members of Seneca. Incident with the greatest number of witnesses, therefore the most credible lake monster encounter happened on the evening of July 14th on July 14th, 1899 on Seneca Lake. Okay, so what happened? It seems that somewhere between Dresden on the west side of the lake and Willard on the east side, pilot Frederick Rose reported that approximately 400 yards ahead of the boat was that what appeared to be the overturned boat. As the steamboat approached the As the steamboat approached to within 50 yards of the creature, the captain gave the order to turn the boat so that its paddle would wheel would strike the creature midway between its head and tail. The boat went ahead full steam and struck the monster with enough impact that made many sailors were thrown off their feet. The mortal wounded animal lay in the water next to the steamboat. But it was so big, this creature was so big that they couldn't carry it, and it like sank to the bottom of the lake. It was never found again. And that's some crap. And people are like, oh, maybe the whole crew, everybody on the crew made it up. And people are like, I don't know, it's kind of hard to really believe that everybody was in on the hoax, all those people, because get enough more than three people, it's harder to keep a secret or a gag or whatever going on for more than a weekend, you know. Lake Sturgeon and Jesus to both lakes can live to be as old as 100 years, grow to 9 feet long and 300 pounds. So, saying is, it could be Lake Sturgeon are being thought to be as monsters at this time. Ooh, I'm gonna take a quick moment to give a shout out to a few podcasts that are pretty awesome, and here they are. But It Was Aliens, Cryptic Campfire, Legendary Pod, that's Legendary Africa, History A, Last Podcast on the Left. Curiosity's Pod, and That's Why We Drink Podcast, Conversations with Strange, Conspiracy Stuff, Your Mom's House, Father and a Kid, That's BS Podcast, Into the Fray Radio, and Screaming Choice. So those are all great podcasts. I listen to them every week at work. They're really entertaining. Hope you guys listen to them. If you listen to my stuff, you would really like their stuff. Next up, we have Augie. Located northwest of Syracuse, New York, and south of Lake Ontario, is Onondaga Lake, a 5 mile long, 1 mile wide body of water with a surface area of 4.6 square miles and maximum depth of 73 feet. That is really deep, people. 73 feet. What is that in like stories? It's six stories deep, 6.742545545454528 stories deep. It's like a small building, like a, not small building. It's a pretty decent sized building. Could be under that lake and it'll still be there. In the late 19th century, and in the early 19th and the early 20th centuries, as Syracuse began to grow, the western shore of Onondaga Lake became increasingly industrialized. All right, it makes sense. Got industrial revolution happening. People are moving away from relying on huge farming for their economy into more industry factory work. This time in New York, a lot of people coming in, and this, if I remember from history class, I think a lot of worker rioter happening at this time. I think its working conditions weren't exactly the greatest at this moment in history. Like children working about 13 hours, way too much, or I think adults way too much, really. No rights, no benefits, or nothing like that. Sewage disposal and industrial discharges into the lake also increased dramatically during this period, resulting in the deterioration of the water's quality. Oh man, so all that nasty water and sludge and sewage and all those people coming in there working in those factories, pooping and crapping all over. Pooping and crapping, like it's the same thing. Wow, say the same thing again. I'm talking too fast, I'm sorry. Okay, slow down. You got the Tanner. By the way, my name's Tanner. I'm the host of Monster Legend Podcast. I hope you're having a great time and enjoying this episode so far. Okay. By World War II, the lake was primarily being utilized for the disposal of both industrial and domestic waters, including runoff from Osaka's 9 Mile Island nuclear power facility, which charged its waste directly into a river that feeds straight into Onondaga Lake. Today, oh, that's not good at all. They had nuclear power back then? I guess, yeah, because they had a nuclear bomb. They had an atomic bomb. So I guess they had the know-how to make a nuclear power plant. That makes total sense. Today, Onondaga Lake is considered by the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, to be one of the most polluted lakes in the United States. That's not bueno. Hopefully clean it up. It'll be hard to clean up the nuclear waste though, because that stuff lasts forever. It is the permanent marker of pollution. It's one of the most popular legends involving the origin of Augie Lake takes place in 1972. When a youthful boy scout returned from a camping trip somewhere in the dense swamp-infested forest of upstate New York, the salamander he had found while sitting on a log. So what happened to the salamander? Failing the salamander, we have no chance of survival, and notoriously cold turquoise winter, he decided to flush it down the toilet, hoping a tiny animal would find some comfort in the relative warmth of the sewers, or at least meet a quick and painless end. But according to this legend, the salamander survived the flush, eventually ended up in Onondaga Lake, where it was immediately immersed in a plethora of pollutants, like mercury and various other chemicals. And with all these pollutions and chemicals, this little salamander mutated and grew over the years until 1977, when people began to notice bizarre occurrences in a lake, including the reported sighting of a dragon swimming not far offshore by members of the Turquoise branch of the Cub Scouts Troop 400. Ooh, very reminiscent of another urban legend of New York, don't you think? Urban myths aside, the history and traditions of the Ontagos, as well as the native Iroquois of the region, seem to indicate that the creature known as Augie has lived in Ontago Lake for centuries. Oh, that's interesting. So I got a story of this boy from 1977, and it coincides with this legend of Native American Iroquois mythology, this creature from been there for hundreds of years. It's quite the coincidence. Theories as to identify of Augie vary depending on who you speak to. Some suggest that Augie may not be a vertebrate at all, but a bizarre descendant of the bacterial colonies and algae blooms that infest the lake. Others have stuck to the more urban myth aspect of the tale, including an original salamander story, an always popular alligator, and a sewers myth. Speaking of alligators and sewers, I think I'll talk about that more. I think I'll touch on that in part two. So if you're interested, make sure you listen to that episode. That'll be coming out on Thursday. Alrighty. I'll take a quick break right about here. And please enjoy your time as we have a little promotion from another podcast come up. Please listen to them and come back for more of Monster Legends of New York on Monster Legend Podcast. Hello and welcome back.
We all know real life can suck sometimes, and your boss accidentally seeing you in your underpants on Zoom last week doesn't help any.
That's why reluctantly codependent sisters, the Shira and Rashalia, keep you enthralled and in stitches every week with their podcast, Legendary Africa.
Every Monday and Friday, we take you on a journey of mythical lands, magical objects, and monstrous creatures, both ancient and modern.
Find Legendary Africa on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and wherever you feed your ears. And remember, stay safe,
stay sexy,
and stay legendary.
Back to Monster Legend Podcast, Monster Legends of New York, Part 1. And next up, we have the Cardiff Giant. This is a very interesting story about the biggest finger to legend that anyone has done. And you know, there's a great maybe episode, I think it was episode one part episode that last podcast on the left did on the Cardiff monster. I'm sure there's others podcasts out there who may have covered it, but here is my take on it. Codriff Giant, sometimes referred to as America's biggest hoax, a 10-foot-long stone figure that was touted as a petrified giant. Again, giants. We talk about giants in Monster Legends of Nevada and in... I think... Massachusetts? Or ice giants in Massachusetts? So this guy, he built this thing, right, to like get back at, let me pull this up here, this article from Life Science by Jesse Sazely, August 17th, 2016. What are you doing here? People after Civil War, people were more open to ideas like evolution and stuff, but they weren't really Barbara Franco writes to people shit. Okay. Attended lectures and stuff and about curiosities. George Hall made this Codriff Giant. He like got certain material, certain rock to carve it out of, then he had it hauled over about 40 miles back to New York. He buried it in the ground and Binghamton, New York. No, that's not where he put it. He put it as a trick would illustrate that what you consider the bigness of literal belief in such Bible stories. So he has an argument with his fundamentalist Christian believe the Bible literally, and he decided to make this petrified giant and bury it to see like, oh, it's so ridiculous. See, don't believe anything, you know. It was over. It took Hall more than 2.5 years and about $2,600 to make the Codriff Giant. Wow. Okay. Button Journal, New York. The Carter Giant, 100-year-old hoax. Barbara Franco writes that people interested in new sciences without really understanding. Although the Carter Giant appealed to a wide range of viewers, Charles Hall's primary impetus, creating it, was to demonstrate the gullibility of religious believers. That's okay, that's what I said. Let's repeat myself now. I'm sorry for repeating myself. Hall was an atheist, which was even in a time of increased interest in science, put him in a tiny minority, made him something of an outcast. According to Scott Tribble, author of A Colossal Hoax, The Giant from Codriff That Fooled America, a book to Life Science about the Codriff Giant. Hall disagreed, but the preacher's assertion got him thinking. As the preacher said, there were actually giants that actually existed. According to Jim Murphy, The Giant and How You Made Humbug America, Hall said that he lay in bed that night wondering why people would believe those remarkable stories in the Bible about giants, when suddenly a thought of making a stone giant and passing off as a petrified man giant down to every last detail, including tiny pores on the giant's surface. This brought the giant national tension, and within days, the giant was leading story in papers across the country in triple set. Okay. So, I think I missed something in my notes. So we shifted back to. And so we went to Fort Dodge, Iowa to get this material, right? And he shifted back over 5 tons, 4.5 metric tons block of gypsum. And at the height of summer, personally conveyed it by wagon to the nearest rail station more than 40 miles away. All then shipped the block east of Chicago, where he already has secured a partner, a couple of stone workers for hire. Here will continue over the course of several weeks. Hall and his team fastened the 10-foot, 3,000-pound, 3 meters giant down to every last. Giant had details like nails, nostrils, and an Adam's apple, clearly visible ribs, and even a hint of a muscle definition. Its leg was twisted over the giant over the right, and its hand seemed to be holding its stomach in pain, though the facial expression was serene. Later, visitors would remark upon its benevolent smile. According to Franco, the giant originally had hair and a beard, but were removed when Hall learned the hair would not petrify. Workers supplied sulfuric acid and other liquids that left it with a dark, dingy, aged hue. So they buried in Codriff. I'm assuming that's why it's called Codriff Giant. Codriff, New York, about 60 miles north of Hall's home in Binghamton. Hall's cousin, William C. Stubb, had a farm there Hall could use for a burial spot. Several fish fossils have been found in a lake nearby. Okay. So he went to this. They buried it and they left it in there for. Much as a lot of religious revivals going on in that time. Like the religion. Such as the Second Great Awakening and Joseph Smith, I think the founder, I would say of, some would say of Mormonism, of Church of Latter-day Saints, as also known as. On a determined Saturday, Hall and Newell hired 2 workers to dig a well. So they're saying, let's dig a well at the burial site. And they're like, oh my God, something, what's this? It's this giant petrified man. What is happening? It's crazy. But they put it there. And here's a quote when he hit the giant's foot about 3 feet down. I declare, some old Indian has been buried here, claimed one of the men, according to the Journal Archaeology. That's not right to me. Why doesn't that sound right? Archaeology. I heard it. It will say it, but it looks weird. You know what I mean? The story of like what? What's his face? Who's the guy with the whip, the lasso, the hat? So he's running from stuff. Had a some beef with his dad. One movie. Indiana Jones. Yeah. That guy. Well, he does. On Monday, Noel raised a tent over a giant and began charging visitors 50 cents a head for a 15-minute viewing, about the price of a movie ticket today. Noel averaged $300 to $500 visitors a day for a few weeks, with one Sunday bringing nearly 3,000, according to Franco. Though Newell owned the farm, Hall managed giant business. Alright. According to Jim Humphreys, that brought the giant national attention. Within days, the giant was leading story in papers across the country. People said, okay. Okay, New York Daily Tribune ran a front page story about the giant, and they brought national attention. Within days, giant. Okay. So National Tribune, did a story on this Cardiff giant, and it brought the attention to the nation on this bizarre thing that's happening. This petrified stone man that's in Cardiff, New York. You can check this out. And the okay, Hall's Grave, Scarecrow's. The Cardiff Giant was moved to Syracuse, New York, where P.T. Barnum offered to buy a quarter share of the giant for $50,000. That's like a lot of money back then. It's a lot of money now, $50,000. Jeez. Man, I would love to have it. I would really appreciate $50,000. All my debt settled. Good amount of my debt settled. Barnum's giant. But yeah, he's got Hall. He declined P.T. Barnum on the deal. But P.T. Barnum kind of stole it and made a giant for himself. Barnum's giant continued to make more money, and within two petrified giants displayed just a few blocks from each other, it became difficult for anyone to take either giant seriously, according to Franco. So there's two stone petrified giants right next to each other, and like, what is this happening? I don't, like, why would I care? You got two here. It's like the Burger King being right next to McDonald's, sort of like this guy's burgers, like, you know what I mean? I don't know how to make jokes. I'm sorry. I'll be funny. I'm just talking. Oh. So eventually, there's more and more of these petrified giants showing up, and it eventually, everyone lost interest in on the whole petrified giant thing, and over time, people figured out, and things came out about Hall and the Cardiff Giant. It turned out to be a hoax. Oh, that's probably a very bad telling of the story. It's very interesting, in my opinion, and I think so. What do you think about the Cardiff Giant? Please let me know. And also, please be aware that the second of the emojis is going to be announced here on this episode right about now. Second emoji in the comments on Instagram is going to be the bone emoji. Again, that is the bone emoji. Oh boy. Pretty good weekend. What I did yesterday, I slept in. No, I didn't really sleep. Hold on one second. I'll be right back. I am thirsty. I'm gonna get a drink. Alrighty then, we are back. I'll be able to get a drink. I was thirsty. We're at the Montauk Monster. I would just go down here. Unless you've been hiding under a rock or spending all your time on Tet Zoo, you almost certainly have heard about the Montauk Monster. a mysterious carcass that washed up on July 13th at Montauk, Long Island, New York. It says it's that weird, bloated creature thing that was took a picture of in the on the beach and looked so weird. A good photo of the carcass showing its right lateral view and without any reference for scale surface on July 30th has been all over the internet. Given that only recently devoted a week of posts to sea monsters, it's only fitting that I cover this too. What has caused widespread confusion and speculation is that while the lower jaw appears to have had jagged rows of pointy teeth, the upper jaw supports a hooked bony beak. This structure has led to the carcass being termed a rodent-like creature with a dinosaur beak as an eagle dog and to suggestions that it might be the carcass of a turtle that had lost its shell. However, the face is short. It looks like the proboscidal part of the skull is long and bulky. While no teeth at all are visible in the upper jaw, the lower jaw clearly contains a large pointed canine and four post canines with tall conical cusps. The two details that make the carcass look odd, lack of hair over most carcass and the supposed beak in the upper jaw, are clearly taphomonic artifacts. The Montauk monster therefore owes its bizarre appearance to partial decomposition. So it got in the water and lost all its hair and got all bloated, like all crazy looking. Like everything those toys, those little like dinosaur things you put in the bathtub and they blow up. It's like that's what's happening with that decomposing body. But it looks so weird. What could it be? Competition made it hard for it to identify this creature. What made it its thing though was the digits of the hands that gave this away to me. The mountain carcass had a very strange, elongated, almost human-like fingers with short claws. Given that they were clearly dealing with the North American carnivoran, raccoon is the obvious choice of what the Montauk monster could be or is. Or was. Raccoons are well known for having particularly dexterous fingers that lack the sort of interdigital webbing normally present in carnivores. The Montauk animal has lost its upper canines and incisors. If you're surprised by the length of the Montauk animal's limbs, know that, like a lot of mammals, we ordinarily assume to be relatively short-legged, raccoons are actually surprisingly leggy. And I think, coincidentally, Gangrams had, I watched a video on Gangrams, on this, about, they were talking, Aaron was talking to Dan about cryptids, and this came up, I believe. Oh, it's got a copyright strike for just doing that little tune there. One joke. Hope that's a joke. Next up, we have Great Naked Bear. Naked Bear was described as a monstrous man-eating creature resembling an enormous bear with no fur and oversized head. Its Irgorian name literally means Great Bear. According to some stories, this monstrous bear is hairless because its fur falls out as a result of eating human flesh. Naked bears are nearly invincible to human attacks, but can be killed by shooting arrows into the soles of their feet. Some believe that naked bear may have been inspired by mammoth or mastodon fossils. Very interesting. Here's more of a folklore. Story I found. Moses Humphrey was a member of Fire Company 40 in New York City in the 1800s. An inspiration for the folk hero character, Mose the Fire Boy. The character of Mose first appeared on Broadway in Benjamin A. Baker's Glanset, New York in 1848. Mose was featured in several stage shows and painting novels in the mid-19th century. So this is this is character of a Broadway show, and it was very popular based on this guy, Firefire. And it was played most famously by Frank Shamfra. If I'm saying that right. I don't mean to disrespect the Shamfra family. Frank, that's his first name, and C-H-A-N-F-R-A-U. How you spell his surname. Shamfra? I think that's right, Shamfra. The Fireboy character was said to have height of 8 feet and hands as big as Virginia hams. He was able to lift trolley cars over his head and rescue babies inside a stovepipe hat. As his own beaver hat was 2 feet across the brim. Certain stories recall Moses performing extraordinary deeds such as swimming the Hudson River with 2 strokes. Or tearing up mulberry and cherry trees to use his bludgeon against the plug uglies, a game that were at odds with New York Fireman Company. Wow. Pretty interesting. That's pretty cool. I like to read those stories if I can find them. Next up, have fun. Everybody, hope you're writing these emojis down as I talked about them. I will give let you know when what picture I am going to post. You'll need to comment on in order to enter the sweepstakes. Next up, we have the Kinderhook Blob. The first report of this creature comes to us from author and New York State Library genealogist Bruce Hallenbeck. When Hallenbeck was a 10-year-old boy, he and his cousins were frolicking in the woods behind his parents' house when they both saw something they would never forget. They seen this like white, floaty, blobbiest thing just floating in the air in the forest. And they got scared and ran away from it. Hallenbeck recorded this bizarre event years later in 1992 in a book he wrote with Paul Robert Bartholomew, and William Brand titled Monster of the North Woods. And here's quote, I believe, from that book. When I was 10 years old, I was up in the woods behind our house with my cousin Cherry, who was then age 7. An even in question, an unnamed man was taking a seriously hike through the woods when he saw what he later described as a big white blob gliding down the hill towards him. Some say that the third reported encounter with this creature also occurred in 1964. Others testify that it was 14 years later in 1978. According to their testimony, the first sign something was amiss in the woods was when both Scott and Lee heard something trampling down the wooded hills outside the tent. So this thing was trampling, was supposed to be floating at the same time, and it's very strange. The thing was described as white hovering being does virtually identical to the creature seen by both Hallenbeck, Cherry, and a 2 unnamed men, except in this case the being looks less like an armorous blob and more like a prototypical ghost. I believe one of the kids said it looked like the Virgin Mary. Also assuming that the there really is a 14-year gap between the encounters, could we be dealing with a creature within a astonishingly long hibernation cycle that has made its home in the Kinderhook Woods? It's worth mentioning that there was also been numerous reports of UFOs at the same time, as well as large reddish-haired hairy hominid living in the same patch of woods. In fact, Helen Back's grandmother and cousin claimed to have seen and pursued what was later dubbed the Kinderhook creature by nationally syndicated television show PM Magazine. Okay. If I would. So, if you'll be so kind to now prepare yourself for the third emoji for the sweepstakes. Third emoji for sweepstakes is the the city skyline at night emoji is the one that is the third emoji. Last emoji will be coming up soon. Next up, we have the A Genesqua is a subspecies of Sasquatch mentioned in Native American folklore as the stone giant man. In Iroquois legend, this hairy hominid was known as Otniyahe, which also translates to stone giant or stone coat. It is reported as Sasquatch's larger, bulkier, and more aggressive cousin. They are said to be more aggressive than most other Sasquatch and appear to be very violent and territorial. A general squaw were said to raid Native American camps and carry away their inhabitants. Ooh, that's scary. What's even more scary is that the majority of these poor souls would be eaten alive in one large feast. However, some would be decapitated first by intense head twisting. Ooh. Genesqua are also said to exude a horrible odor from their armpits, as described as a mixture between that of a skunk and a dead animal. Genesqua is a Native American term meaning stone giants. Explanation of how the creature got its name could be that their fur was coarsened with dirt or mud after rolling around in it, so they were hardened and looked like stone, or possibly an outer layer of armor protection, possibly against arrows. With this standing as a possible theory, it can be said that Genesqua may have been no different from the typical Sasquatch, save for the fact they were covered in mud. The descriptions of these creatures are very similar aside from the armor aspect of the Genesqua species. Ooh, so these, oh my god, that's terrifying, right? These giant animals covered in mud, smell like crap, like dead carcass and skunk, taking your friends and family and twisting your neighbor's head around, eating them alive. Oh, terrifying ordeal. Ever like smelled like a dead animal? It's like the most disgusting thing ever. There was this dead calf. We had to have cows at my place, and this cow got sick and it died. And it smell horrendous. It's got like gut wrenching, like pull your guts out. Smell like ugh. Smell of like rotting meat. Next up, we have the Jonga, or Junkies. The Jonga, or Junkies, are a race of small humanoid nature spirits from Iroquois folklore, sometimes referred to as English as dwarfs or pygmies. Think like leprechauns, kind of. They are usually invisible, but sometimes reveal themselves to humans, particularly to children, elders, and medicine people. Oh, so like, I wonder what that is about. All of those three demographics have in common. So, is it imagination? I don't know. It's interesting. Please tell me more about that. If you know anything about that? In most tribes, Jonga are described as being about knee high. Although Discora, little people are said to be 4 feet tall. The Jonga may play tricks and might even be dangerous to people who disrespect them or their natural home, but they are generally friendly towards their Iroquois and will sometimes do favors for people who leave tobacco or other offerings for them. There are several different types of Jonga or little people that appear in Iroquois folklore. Gahongas are earth spirits who live on rocky river banks and caves. They are normally strong and are responsible for moving rocks around the countryside. Very nice. Gandaya, or drum dancers, are nature spirits who offer often help respectful Iroquois farmers with their crops. Hey man, I'll help you. Hope we grow some corn, maize. Sorry. Hope we grow some maize and squash, man. Not my beast, man. Anyway, sorry. Praise her ears. Okay. Boy. They got the name drum dancers because they are always invisible. So only the sound of their drums signal their presence to the Iroquois. Odows are gnomes that live underground and keep snakes and subterranean monsters under control. Thank you, Odows, for... Where's my freaking mouse? There. Those Iroquois. That is the Jogas. Ooh, a lot of stuff happening. We got some secret lake monsters. Got old Granny. Got Champy. We got, I don't know. Cowdrift Giant. A lot of stuff happening in New York. And it's time for the fourth and final emoji needed in to enter the sweepstakes. The fourth and final emoji required to enter sweepstakes would be the mushroom emoji. And I hope you have gotten all four of those emojis. Again, that is the fourth one is the mushroom emoji. If you miss any, please go back and listen again. I will not repeat them all again after it's been said. So what's in, remember when that pilot had a forced landing in Hudson River? It was the geese. Well, apparently there were some UFOs in the Hudson time. What the former officer had seen would be observed by many times in Hudson Valley over the next few years by hundreds of different witnesses. A V-shaped set of multicolored lights moving slowly and silently across the sky. On March 26, 1983, a front page story, the Westchester Rockland Daily Item proclaimed, article which told of sterling of a triangular UFO on March 24th, caught the attention of a group of UFO researchers in a valley associated with Dr. J. Allen Hynek, founder of the Center for UFO Studies. The group started an investigation of the phenomenon, which was later documented as a book, Night Siege, the Hudson Valley UFO Science, authored by Dr. Hynek and Philip J. Ambrogno with the help of Bob Pratt. The group opened a UFO hotline and received over 300 calls. Over 300 people called this UFO hotline from people that have seen the UFO on the night of the March 24th alone. So, 300 people seeing this UFO, seeing something they couldn't explain on March 24th, all the same night. That is crazy. So, there's like one guy out there. The UFO was not just seen over Hudson Valley, but as far east as New Haven, Connecticut, and as far north as Brooksville, Connecticut. While most reports describe the UFO moving at a very slow speed, hovering or turning slowly like a wheel, a few reports describe the object as it suddenly zooming away at fantastic speeds or just disappearing. That's crazy. Like, where did it go? Okay, that's a massive... Well, it's crazy. In some accounts, the shape varied so that lights appeared as more of a circle than a V. The researchers knew that investigated most UFO reports, their interior reports have identified flying objects or IFOs. Most observers reported the lights moved together as a solid object. So they're saying that maybe it was people flying in formation, like a plane's flying in formation, but people were saying I don't know. They're pretty much exactly like they were one solid mass more than like a variation of planes. And I was also the idea that maybe it could be a blimp. So, and they called blimp pilots. The pilots, I believe, but they can't find anything being scheduled in that area at that time of the UFO sighting. And hope you're ready for more of New York. I have more coming up in part two, Monster Legends of New York part two, where I'll be telling you some stories, and I'm going to have a special guest join me on part two, and he'll talk to us about Mole Man. We'll talk about alligators in the sewers, and I will give you a few folklore stories I found from based in New York. So I hope you enjoyed this podcast episode, Monster Legends of New York, part one. Look forward to part two again on Thursday. And again, if you're listening to this, you should know how to enter the sweepstakes, which, by the way, the picture is going to be of Champy. I'll post a picture of Champy on Instagram when this episode is aired, or after this episode is aired. And that is where you'll post, comment the emojis I've said here. First one to do that is going to win the sweepstakes. First comment will be the winner. It has to be one comment of all four emojis in the order I've said them. Is that simple? So, if you guys are paying attention. And I hope you're enjoy this podcast. Enjoy your Monday. My name is Tanner. I have been your host. This has been Monster Led Podcast. And remember, every week, everywhere, cryptids on Monster Legend Podcast. Thank you for listening to this episode of Monster Legend Podcast. Want to find more information about Monster Legend Podcast, go to monsterlegendpodcast.com or anchor.fm/monsterlegendpodcast. There you can find all episodes and platforms on which the podcast is on, which you can subscribe to. You also can email me with questions that will be answered on the show. Thank you.